This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode is brought to you by the Friends of SQPN. Join us in our mission to reach out to the ends of the world with engaging and inspiring programs by supporting us with a monthly donation. Go to sqpn.com for more information.
sqpn.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, the show that is entirely dedicated to the news about The Hobbit, wherever it's on the planet, in New Zealand or elsewhere, and to talk about a huge amount of news that is going to be the topic or the subject of this show is my friend Dave Cahill. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Great. I'm excited to be talking about The Hobbit. We almost missed this week, didn't we?
Yes. I had a crazy day on Thursday. Normally, we record this on Thursday. And I have to honestly confess that I forgot about the show. And I was elsewhere working, and I'm going on a big trip to Ethiopia next week. And and at the end of the day, I was like, I'm missing something. What is this craving that I have? And then I was like, oh, Hobbit news. I need Hobbit news. And so we're recording this during the weekend, and I'm so glad, Dave, that you could join me today, even though this is not your usual day, to talk about Hobbit news. And as I said, there is a lot of Hobbit news to talk about. So let's get on with it.
Get down. Confounded old Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't been dropping no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
So, what is in your opinion, Dave, the biggest story of this week?
Well, it's not from this week, but I think we have to start off with the new picture released of Bilbo and the Dwarves. Mm-hmm. I believe it was in the LA Times, and it was like a week ago, actually. Mm-hmm. But it's whenever we get a new image from the film, I think we always have to start out talking about that.
Yes. So it's the most it's the closest thing that you can get to actually experiencing the movie. It's seeing photos from the actual footage.
Mm-hmm.
So what's this picture showing us?
So this one's a pretty fun one. It's just got Bilbo standing amidst four of the dwarves, and I'll be frank, I haven't associated the names with the actual actors and faces yet, so I'm remiss in not knowing which dwarves specifically these are, but it's basically Bilbo with four of the dwarves. Let's see if we can figure out who they are really quick.
Yeah, the one on the left has a beard, the other one also has a beard.
Yes.
The third one, they all have beards.
They all have beards.
Big noses. Yeah, I guess, you know, this is just a typical thing of we've not been familiarized with these dwarves. And it's kind of interesting to realize that in a few years from now, you know, we're listening back to this podcast. And it's like, how could we not recognize, you know, Dwalin or Balin or
whatever? How did we not know exactly who they were?
Yeah. So there are four dwarves in the picture. This is in Bilbo's house, I assume, or is this outside?
Yep.
Or
this would appear to be at the unexpected party. It's definitely Bilbo's home. It's inside of Bag End, and the dwarves are standing around him with plates of food. So this is when they've shown up unannounced and started demanding that he serve them.
Yes, there's one of the dwarves actually has a plate on his head.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is. He's carrying it on his head, and on the plate itself seems to be bread or some, I don't know, a cake, or it's hard to tell.
I'm trying to figure out what food this is. I think the one in front looks like some kind of meat, and then the one in the back looks like a loaf of bread or a cake or something.
Could the one on the left, could that be chicken wings?
Yes.
Do they even have
chicken?
Do they have chicken wings in Middle Earth?
They're getting ready to have their Super Bowl party.
We did see chickens on the market, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
A big pig, and there were some chickens. So these could be chicken wings. And I was wondering, there's the reason I was a bit confused as to where this is. I mean, I can see the ceiling of what looks like Bag End, but there is some green stuff on the left. It looks like a plant. Or I was like, could this be the porch of his? Could this be the door? Is the door open? Or I don't know. And even the light seems to be a bit too much light for being inside of Bag End. I'm figuring that they're actually standing in the door opening.
Yeah, they could be. It could be sort of the foyer, or it could be even standing out in front of it.
Yeah. Interesting. So
let's see. All right. I think the guy on the right hand is Owen.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Any of those guys? Is that guy? No, it's not. Let's go back. I found me some actual pictures with captions.
Oh, cool.
I'm gonna start memorizing.
Sure. In the meantime, I'm stunned by the detail on the clothing. You can see the structure and the colors, and it's beautifully handcrafted. It is fantastic. It's probably stuff that we'll see a lot better now that the movie has a much higher resolution and we get these, you know, the 48 frames a second. Actually, that will help with the details, because if you just have got 24 frames per second, as soon as the camera moves, the image gets blurred. Whereas with 48 frames per second, you will actually see the most minute details in the background. And I think for the art department that worked so hard on this movie, that's going to be actually very gratifying to know that even the smallest details will, at least as long as it's in the frame, it will be visible.
Yep. Okay. I believe I've officially got names now.
Okay.
We've got on the left, and this is left to right, we have Biffer or Bifer.
Uh-huh.
Then we have Dwalin, that's the bald guy.
Yes.
Then we have Bofer, which is the guy in the back with the hat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the guy with the gray beard is Owen.
Oh, I see.
Yes, and so we have a mixture of the different sounding names, and a couple of siblings.
And we've got a concerned looking Bilbo, who's also a bit, yeah, as almost as if he's been working a lot. You see, one of his suspenders is missing. So
he looks rather haggard.
He must have been working for hours in the kitchen trying to, you know, prepare food for them.
Yep, this is after he's been run ragged.
I love it. And the funny thing is, again, he looks really small because these dwarves are all bigger than he is, in both vertically and horizontally. And it's so fascinating because, of course, we all know him from you know, other movies, Hot Fuzz and Sherlock, and he is a regular-sized guy. And yet here, he really looks like a hobbit.
Yes, they've done an excellent job of shrinking him.
Yeah. Without even special effects. That's the coolest part. Now, I was also wondering about the and then we're probably going to move on with the news, but the dwarf on the left with a braided beard, he's holding this plate, and if you look at his right hand, it's enormous. So I wonder if that's the real hand of the actor or if they are wearing gloves. I mean, compare the hand with Bilbo's hands. It's twice the size. So I wonder if they, you know, we know that the hobbits have these fake feet, the rubber feet. They're much bigger than their actual feet. I wonder if they did the same thing with the dwarves for the hands.
That's a good point. Remember if it could also be perspective. I mean, his hand looks like it's really
close.
His arm look like they're really close to the camera compared to Martin Freeman. Look how, like, Martin Freeman's wrist looks like it's about the same width as the thumb of that actor. So I don't think.
Yeah. Well, it could be closer, but I'm also thinking, you know, if you give a dwarf bigger hands, it will, and then of course the thick clothing, it will make your arms look a lot shorter. So with the big hair, the head is kind of out of proportion in comparison to the rest of the body. If you add big arms, thick clothing, and then you know, like fake hands, you can actually make the proportions of the character look smaller, look more like a dwarvish person, which I don't think you would get. You wouldn't get the same effect if you would see the regular sized head without all the hair and normal hands. It would seem kind of not dwarvish enough, perhaps. But then again, I don't know. It's one picture.
It's a possibility.
So. It must be tough to act with fake hands, so, you know, wearing rubber gloves basically for the duration of the shooting. That must be quite irritating.
I'm just looking at. I think it's a perspective thing. I think he was standing much closer to the camera, and they're doing some kind of weird perspective thing.
Could very well be. And then, of course, we don't know. Sweet. We don't know if this is taken from the actual footage or whether this is just a photographer who happened to be there while they were rehearsing or anything.
Right. So,
anyway, it looks very cool. So those were the Hobbits. Any news about the female characters in the movie?
There was a little bit. So this is kind of just following up on an article that we talked about a few weeks ago, last time we did an episode. It was from Yahoo, and so it was from January 27th, and they did this interview with Evangeline Lilly promoting the Blu-ray release of her Real Steel movie. Mm-hmm. And of course, as we've mentioned before, whenever you get any Hobbit actor, you're never invariably going to ask them about the Hobbit, whatever else they're doing.
Yeah.
And so she had talked. We had mentioned one of her quotes where she had talked about playing the made up Peter Jackson made up female elvish character Tariel.
Yep.
And we left out one of her other quotes, which I thought was interesting. She sort of talks about how when she was on Lost, they kind of taught her to act very spontaneous, to not spend a whole lot of time preparing her lines or thinking about sort of her character's mannerisms, but kind of just sort of play, you know, her character was Kate, play Kate very naturally, sort of, I don't know if you would say be herself, but just sort of don't over rehearse or over practice
it. Well, and it worked because she was Kate, basically. If you saw her in interviews, you're like, yeah, that's exactly the same type of personality that we see, you know, on screen.
Yep. So she says that that being in The Hobbit has been completely different experience because she can't sort of play this elf character naturally. She can't be spontaneous or be herself because she's sort of studying to be a non-human character. So in the article they say, this means Lily has had to train to walk, talk, and of course fight like an elf. She said, so on top of my stunt training, which I need to learn how to be proficient with bow and arrow and with daggers and fighting orcs that are, you know, 10 feet tall, I also have to learn the language of Elvish, and I have to learn a received pronunciation neutral English accent for when I speak English. And when you add in learning to move and gesture like an elf, Lily figures she has spent four times as much time preparing as I do actually shooting.
Wow.
Yes.
So we will probably get a performance that is more akin to the Arwen character. I mean, it's that too was a portrayal that was very different from what's her name again? The actress.
Liv Tyler.
Liv Tyler. When you saw her in The Hulk or in Armageddon, she didn't act at all like Arwen. I mean, thank goodness, because I thought that those movies were pretty bad, and I really liked actually the way that she portrayed Arwen. But it seems to me that for Evangeline Lilly, that might be the same type of change in acting style.
Yep, I agree. Although the one thing I think will be interesting to see is. These elves, of course, are very different kind of elf, you know, as far as elves go. From sort of the Hobbit or human point of view, all elves are elves. But in terms of elves, there are sort of these three very different groups of elves in Middle-earth at this point. There are the sort of the high elves, the elves who've been to the West and returned, and there aren't many of them left. And that's what Arwen was. That's what Elrond is, the sort of the descendants of the Noldor. And then you have the kind of the Twilight elves who are the elves that never made it over to Valinor, but still sort of they've kind of seen the light, and a lot of them came out of this kingdom Doriath, and that's a lot of people like, I believe Celeborn falls in that category, and I think some of the elves of Lothlorien fall into this category. There's a lot of mingling of elves there. But then the elves of Mirkwood are kind of these the almost dark elves. They're elves that never made it to the West, didn't go to Valinor, didn't live in the kingdom of Doriath, and so they didn't get to see the light of the trees in the face of the Maia Melian, who was queen of Doriath. And so these are actually kind of a much lower level of elf, so they shouldn't seem quite so lofty,
right.
As Arwen and Elrond in them. So I'll be interesting to see how they play that. And of course, they should speak an entirely different language too. So I don't know if we'll get into the nuances of that, and I don't know what they should sound like. So I won't be able to tell, as I listen. But I'll be interested to see what people say. Like, the sort of, will they get into that, or is that just too much nuance for the film audiences and too much work? And will they just sort of play them more as elves?
Well,
and of course, the other thing too is,
I guess we'll get to see some differences there. I mean.
Yes, because we are going to see Galadriel and Elrond again. So,
yeah, true, and I think you need to have that playfulness as well of the at least in the story that those elves are a lot more, in a way, they're behaving in a younger way, and so I'd love to see that actually, and I think it fits the overall mood of the story.
Well, in particular, it'll be interesting to see how the rumor is that Tariel is involved with the guards and the prison where the dwarves are kept locked up. And of course, the way Bilbo helps them escape, spoiler in case you haven't read the book, is that he sort of manipulates the butler and the sort of head of the guard into getting drunk on the wine, the store of wine they have down there. And I think he doesn't do a lot. He just kind of waits until they do it and then steals the key. But that's not elves in any way, shape, or form in the way that they were portrayed in the first Lord of the Rings film as these very lofty characters, these elves getting drunk and passing out and then Bilbo stealing their key.
That wouldn't work.
And theoretically, it sounds like that might actually be Evangeline Lilly's character might be one of the elves that gets drunk, gets wasted on their ale. So that should be fun. I'll be interested to see how they do that.
What if her character is kind of a disobedient elf and she kind of be living on the edge a little bit more? That would match her style in, or her role in Lost, actually, where she was also kind of.
That would be very fitting.
On the fringes of the law. Interesting. Perhaps she's imprisoned for some reason.
Yes, that's true. Maybe she gets in trouble.
Who knows?
See that.
If so, you heard it here first.
That's right.
If it isn't so, we didn't say it.
Give us credit. So I think that the most exciting news probably from the last week, because this is from February 8th, and it was, I believe it was announced first in Collider on Collider.com, is new casting news. They just announced that actor Billy Connolly will be playing Dain Ironfoot, Dain the Second. And Dain is, of course, a cousin, I believe, of Thorin Oakenshield, and he is the leader of the dwarves in the Iron Hills, and he is the one that comes at the end of when the dwarves are in the Lonely Mountain and they're kind of besieged by the forces of Lake Town and the elves, and they send word to their relatives and friends, this is who they're sending word to, Dain Ironfoot's dwarves in the Iron Hills. And they're the ones this is the big dwarf army that shows up at the Battle of Five Armies. So it's kind of, in the book, he's kind of a side character. I think he gets expanded on a lot in a lot of the additional materials and the appendix of the Return of the King. And so, so people were kind of surprised that he hadn't been announced until
now. Yes, me too. I was like, wow, are they still doing casting in this time frame of the whole production? Seems like an afterthought. But or it could be part of this, let's roll out the news gradually. Perhaps they've been in negotiations for a long time and just wanted to keep some news to roll out later. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really exciting. And he, of course, is a fairly big name actor. He's been in a lot of really, really big stuff. He was in, I think he's very well known for Boondock Saints. He was in the most recent X-Files movie.
Oh, really?
I think that was a bit of a cult film. It's not wasn't widely watched, but I went and saw it. And when I saw him, I was like, he looks familiar, and that's what I recognized him from.
Cult film, that's a new euphemism for basically a box office disaster.
Yes. for a movie that kind of maybe should have been bigger, but didn't.
Right, right. He wasn't the last.
He was in the Tom Cruise Last Samurai remake.
Yeah, enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, so he's actually a pretty neat, big name actor, so it's pretty exciting. He's good, and people are very excited about him, and so it'll be interesting to see what role Dian plays, how he gets filled out. Will we get to see him beyond the Battle Five Armies? Will we get to see him in some of the dwarvish flashbacks, if we have any? So it'll be cool. This is interesting. This rolls us into our next story when we get to it.
Before we get to there, I found a clip on YouTube actually about this Billy Connolly news. So
oh, good.
Let's play that and see.
Billy Connolly is the latest celebrity to be added to the cast of Sir Peter Jackson's multi-million-dollar production of The Hobbit. The Scottish comedian will play Dane Ironfoot, a great dwarf warrior. He'll star alongside the likes of Sir Ian McKellen in two Hobbit movies. Billy Connolly is no stranger to New Zealand. He's toured a number of times and made a television series here.
Okay, so I apologize, by the way, for the horrible audio quality. It was only in your right or your left ear, depending on whether you have your headphones on correctly or not. But and so he's a comedian. That's interesting. So it's not going to be just a serious role. I mean, I imagine they don't cast a comedian just to be a serious person.
Yep.
Cool. All right, you were about to move over
launches
to the
into
next
our next story. Yeah. There was an article in The Guardian from yesterday, actually, and this is always the nice thing Thursday. Whenever we have to do this delayed episode, we can always pick up an extra story.
Yes.
But an article by Ben Child from The Guardian just sort of talks about the fact that they're casting a lot more big name actors in The Hobbit than they ever did in The Lord of the Rings. And there's a lot of people that are, this is one of those sort of typical articles where they're trying to dredge up controversy and have something interesting to say. But it is an interesting question that part of the charm of The Lord of the Rings was the fact that they had all these kind of not very well-known British and Kiwi actors.
Yes.
And The Hobbit, they've really gone the opposite route when you look at the casting. They have Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch, who are already pretty well-known, at least in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Armitage is, of course, known very well. Aidan Turner, James Nesbitt. Barry Humphries is the Goblin King. Sylvester McCoy is Radagast the Brown. Stephen Fry is the Master of Lake Town. It's really there's this one quote that's interesting that he says, I suspect these appearances will make it rather hard for us Brits to lose oneself in the story, a bit like if Luke Skywalker had been played by a young Philip Schofield in the first Star Wars movie with Roland Ratt as Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back. And that's an interesting question. If you have a lot of these big name marquee actors who are really well known in other roles, is that going to sort of interfere with our ability to see them as their characters in this film?
If you ask me, that's not going to be a problem, because for most of these roles, there will be prosthetics involved. They're not, it's not like Nicolas Cage, like what every movie is in. It's like, oh, that's just Nicolas Cage playing himself. He has like,
yes.
he doesn't even try to change his behavior or his acting. He's just Nicolas Cage, and he is just I usually never even remember what he's called in the movie he is in. Whereas in this situation, they play orcs, they play dwarves, elves. Mm-hmm. At least they get new ears, So I don't personally think it's going to be much of a problem. I actually had the opposite problem with The Lord of the Rings. At the time, I didn't know any of these actors, or at least, well, I recognized the dude from The Matrix. And then I was like, yeah, Arwen looks familiar. What movie was she in? Armageddon. It's afterwards that we got to know a lot of these actors in other productions. And now when I go back to, well, let's say, gosh, was that the Two Towers or the you know, it's like, well, wait a minute, that's the dude from Fringe. It's like I cannot see what's his name, the actor, I forgot.
John Noble.
Now that I go back to The Lord of the Rings, it just takes me out of the movie immediately. It's like, okay, where is his laboratory? You know, there's going to be a Fringe event, and I cannot, you know, reverse that. He is too attached to Fringe for me now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the two factors are. It's harder to comment on this, and he points this out at the end of his article, that it's hard to comment on a lot of these actors as an American because I'm not as familiar with them as people in Europe are, especially people like Stephen Fry and Sylvester McCoy. I don't really – and I didn't watch Doctor Who, so I don't really know them that well, and I don't recognize Barry Humphries. But I do know Martin Freeman quite well and Richard Armitage, and I'll be honest, the scenes that I've seen them in the trailers and stuff, I am not having that problem at all. I mean, Richard Armitage, when you combine the makeup that he's wearing with the acting, he doesn't look at all like any other characters he's played before. And Martin Freeman is incredible as Bilbo.
Yes. And doesn't remind me at all of his role in Sherlock.
No.
I mean,
I do think the other thing I was going to toss in there is I think maybe it might also have to do with both the actor's skill and also maybe sort of the compatibility of the character with other characters they play. Like if Martin Freeman happens to play Bilbo a little bit like his John Watson from Sherlock, not that big of a deal. There's actually a lot of similar sort of personality things going on there. They're not so incompatible that it's distracting. I don't think he is playing him like him, but it doesn't bother me that much. On the other hand, I absolutely detest what's his name's Elrond. I can't remember his name.
Now you catch me off guard.
dang it, what is his name?
Hold on, I'm Googling.
Hugo Weaving.
You go.
I couldn't, from the first time I saw him in every subsequent scene he played Elrond, I was like, he's playing him as Agent Smith. Which is just very distracting.
That was
and
my
not
problem
all
too.
The way Elrond's supposed to be.
I was like, this is too much like The Matrix.
Elrond in the book to me was always very kind. You know, he's stern and wise and lofty, but he's very kind and he's never contemptuous. And the Elrond in the films is kind of cold and almost contemptuous and judgmental. And it just seems a lot like Agent Smith.
Exactly.
And John Noble, same thing. You're right. Now that I've seen him in something else, when I go back and watch him in this, I'm like, he seems to be playing the same character.
Yeah. Well, he's a little bit kinder, but, you know, he's like the Walternet, which is the Walter from the other dimension. I was like, yeah, that's the same nasty, mean guy. The only thing lacking is all that food that he is disgustingly, you know, devouring. However, well, let's take someone else. Dominic Monaghan, who played Mary in The Hobbit and was subsequently, of course, very famous for his role as Charlie in the TV series Lost. I mean, it's the same guy, talks the same, acts the same way, but it's what you say. It was such a compatible role for him to be playing this kind of funny, little bit out of control hobbit that it just, I don't have a problem at all. I mean, I don't have that association. When I go back to The Lord of the Rings, like, oh, that's, you know, he should be in Lost. Where's the island?
Yeah, if he plays it a little bit like his Lost character, then actually, to me, the role that he was more weird in was when he was in that short-lived flashback series.
Yes. Oh,
he was playing kind of a kind of a jerk and an evil guy. And it was like, I'm not buying it.
Didn't work at all, though. No, you should be talking about second breakfast here. It's not, just not believable.
What happened to you, Mary?
It's kind of ironic because, of course, Dominic Monaghan and Evangeline Lilly had a very long-lasting relationship over the filming of Lost, and they broke up afterwards. But it's kind of ironic that we've got Dominic in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and now we've got Evangeline Lilly in The Hobbit.
Yes.
So it's funny.
So, it does lose – so the film loses a little bit of its charm in doing it with all these big-name actors as opposed to sort of the small-name actors. But it's also got a – but that's inevitable. It's got a much bigger budget. They're doing it in 3D. You know, that's just what happens when you make a – when you make a slightly – it's not like Lord of the Rings was low budget, but – we make a slightly lower budget film like that, and then it does really well. When they come back to do the next movie or the next series of movies, of course, you're going to have a bigger budget, bigger name actors. That's just the way it goes.
And think of the added advantage in terms of PR. I mean, the magazines are constantly writing about your movie because of all these famous actors that are in it. If they had cast only unknowns, you know, people might write about them after the movie comes out. But right now, every time there is a new actor that is announced as being cast, you've got like front page articles in all these popular magazines. And so I think it's probably just as much an acting choice or a casting decision as it is a PR marketing decision to bring in famous people instead of just unknown actors. Plus, you know what you can expect. You can look at their previous work, whereas with The Hobbit, with The Lord of the Rings, might have been guesswork and kind of a bit of a gamble sometimes to cast an unknown. And I
think all of the people that they've cast so far seem extremely well suited to their characters. You know, I understand that maybe Stephen Fry as Master of Lake Town is possibly overkill and maybe a bit of a PR stunt. But at the same time, I think he'll do a great job. So it doesn't bother me that much.
No, totally.
So now maybe we should talk about a guy who largely got famous through The Lord of the Rings and a lot of his success who came afterward, Andy Serkis.
Yes.
He just said a couple days ago, apparently he's back shooting scenes as Gollum again. And this is the first time that he's shooting his scenes as Gollum alongside his castmates live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I always wonder if maybe the news stories have befuddled the details a bit, because it's hard to believe that he hasn't shot. I mean, the very first scenes that they were shooting were the Riddles in the Dark Gollum Bilbo cave scenes,
and we know
maybe
that
Andy Serkis wasn't in them.
No, he was there. He was there.
Yeah,
it's the first thing they filmed, and I totally remember that he was there, and Bilbo was there, and I mean that was not in the first production video. But what I'm now thinking is that perhaps this will be about other scenes, perhaps even new material that they created, new storylines. So that in some way or another, he is interacting more with the main characters than just in that riddle scene, in that riddle chapter.
That is also what I'm wondering as well.
So I'm thinking perhaps could he be showing up with other characters? Of course, he's following Bilbo. And so, I wouldn't be surprised if they gave him a bigger role because he's such an iconic character for the franchise. And so having him only in that sequence with the Riddles in the Dark and then just kind of forgetting about him, perhaps that might not be a smart thing to do because people expect Gollum to be an integral part of both of the movies. So I'm thinking this is probably new material, or I don't know, perhaps he might be not interacting with the dwarves as such, with the company of Bilbo, but perhaps with somehow they found a way to tie him into whatever the last battle in some way, or I don't know, perhaps even with the necromancer, I don't know.
I've been wondering this for quite a long time. I did not think that they would be able to resist the temptation to have Gollum follow Bilbo out of the mountains. So I wondered for a long time if they would do this, and the first thing I thought when I read this was the question about, I thought he already shot some scenes. And the second thing that I wondered was, Oh, aha! At last we see evidence. Mm-hmm. They are going to insert Gollum into later scenes.
But people will be upset about this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There's really no... I don't remember anything in Tolkien's works that could justify this.
There's nothing. In fact, there's things in Tolkien that completely contradict this.
Right? Yes.
When Gandalf recounts his story about finding Gollum in Lord of the Rings, he specifically mentions that a lot of time passes before Gollum leaves
right.
his cave. So,
right.
But, you know, hey, I'm willing to see how it goes.
It's scary, though. Uh-huh. Hey, perhaps we should take a very short break before we continue with the news.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back, wander the paths of Mirkwood, visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
Just wanted to mention to our listeners that one of the treasure troves for Tolkien-related merchandise and books and toys and collectibles is the Amazon store, and SQPN is an Amazon affiliate. So keep us in mind if you ever go shopping for Tolkien-related stuff or anything else, you know, if you want to buy your new big plasma 3D TV on Amazon, think of us and go to thehobbits.sqpn.com first, or just sqpn.com, and click on that Amazon banner. It won't cost you anything more than you would normally pay, but it will help us pay for our bills. So if you think Amazon, think of Secrets of the Hobbit /sqpn, and we're very grateful if you do so. Let's get back to the news. What else have we got in our big, impressive list of things to talk about?
Well, very quickly, there was on the Andy Serkis news, there's a couple other articles. There's a quote from him in another article that's about this whole Andy Serkis filming stuff. They asked him, you know, how what's it been like to be back on the set and have all the new technology and stuff, and he says... it's fantastic. What's great is that with the technology, we can shoot on a live action set. I don't have to go back and repeat the process. There's no disconnect anymore. When I'm acting with my fellow actor on a live action set, it's all for real, and whatever happens between those two actors is what's recorded. The live action actor is recorded with film cameras, while my performance is Gollum is recorded with the performance capture cameras. So it's pretty neat. I guess his experience of acting in these films has really changed with the upgraded technology.
But does it mean that he is actually acting? They are capturing his performance while he's interacting with the actors?
Yeah, that's the impression I get from reading this. Is that
so it's not,
previously what they had to do was they probably had the live action actors like Elijah Wood and Sean Astin maybe acting to like the tennis ball or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, and or maybe Andy Serkis is in the scene doing his lines, but he's not actually doing his performance. He's just there to give them something to act against. And then later they would have to go back and do the motion capture. It sounds to me like they're doing it all at once now. They're doing as he said, they're filming the live action stuff and filming his motion capture performance all at the same time. And then they just all they have to do is apply the special effects.
Wow. That would be definitely a major thing, not just for the movie, but for special effects in general. I mean, if they could have done Star Wars like this, and perhaps Jar Jar Binks would have turned out a lot better because they were using the same process where they would rehearse the scene with the actors and then shoot the actors and the digital character completely separate from each other. And of course, that never creates the same natural interaction that you would have in this situation. Very cool.
Now, yeah, so that's it's very neat.
Andy
Serkis is such a great guy. He's like a wealth of wonderful interview material, and he's so open. Love him.
I hope he's able to pass this on to other actors as well, because he's quite unique. You know, what would the world of big blockbusters be nowadays without him? He's starring on almost any movie featuring big digital apes or whatever.
Yeah, he's cleaning up.
We know, of course, that Benedict Cumberbatch is going to do the not just the voice for Smaug, but also the motion capture, right?
Yeah, I did hear so, that. So I guess they're going to cover his face in sensors so he can do very
well.
Sort
and
of,
and then you can imagine if that Andy Serkis is probably going to coach him for that, if that indeed is going to happen. I guess at least for the facial movements, probably, you know, trying to play the movements of a real dragon is not very useful if you're human shaped.
Yep.
But I definitely think that the motion capture of the face, he'll probably get a lot of help from Andy Serkis, who is the world, you know, global expert on this.
Right, and this is I mean, Benedict Cumberbatch is learning an increasingly valuable skill from the master. Now you'll have two actors to choose from whenever you're doing these motion capture performances.
Yes.
Instead of always using Andy Serkis, now you can also get Benedict Cumberbatch.
A slightly different accent, though.
Yes.
I'm so curious to see how he will pull this off because, oh my goodness, I'm still – I now watched the first episode of the second season of Sherlock. I still have to watch the other two. And I'm just totally blown away by that series. It is fantastic.
So good, isn't it? And that first episode with I don't remember the name of the lady who played Irene Adler, but I thought she was great. I thought their take on her was interesting.
It's fantastic. And Cumberbatch really carries these movies. It's I'm calling them movies because that's how they feel, but it's just
a really
TV
are
show.
Movies.
But they're little mini movies and fantastic. Now everybody, of course, wants to be an actor in The Hobbit, and that sometimes creates huge problems. And I saw mainstream news reports, which is pretty rare when it comes to this movie. Mm-hmm. About some disaster with castings, and they had to shut down the whole casting call, and it was a total, you know, chaos. What happened there?
Yeah, I guess they were doing an open casting call or open auditions in Lower Hutt near Wellington, and they were expecting 1,200 people, just 1,200, you know.
Mm-hmm. Which is already,
but they
a
had
huge
almost 3,000 people show up, and they eventually had to shut it down after they'd only seen about 800 people because the police were worried. The police had to show up, and they were worried that there'd be like stampedes and just all kinds of problems. And so, they had to shut down the auditions because so many people showed up.
What were these people actually trying to get as a role? Was this for hobbits? Was this for elves or just human characters, orcs? What kind of casting
question.
Call?
Let's see. Hobbit casting call described a search for men under 164 centimeters, women under 155 centimeters, big men with character faces over 175 centimeters, men with large biceps, women with character faces, and women with long hair.
Huh.
I'm going to go on a limb. Men with large biceps and men with character faces, that sounds to me like people for an army of dwarves.
Oh, interesting. I've got a video actually here of that casting call.
Yep,
let's listen.
So what we have here is actually a queue of insanity. This guy's jogging around with his FBI / I won this in Magna Mail.
Okay, something's gone wrong.
Where does the line start?
I'm afraid I don't know at the minute. It could be there, but we're trying to figure it out.
Okay. Have you been in line yet today?
Yes.
And then what happened?
Oh, I've got a friend holding for me.
Oh, okay, but you can't find him.
No, I know where he is. I'm just helping out the crowds.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Crowd control.
Huh?
Crowd control.
Yeah.
Sweet. Any trouble today from the crowd?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Just really just helping out.
Yeah, and if you press on your ear, will it go through to a radio signal to your friend?
No, it's an iPod.
Oh, okay. But can you press there again and just go, everything's under control?
Everything's under control.
Yeah, that looks good. Cool, man.
That is a massive crowd there.
We're in Belmont at Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit tryout, the auditions for extras. And the police have just said that it's all cut, so it's all over, and we have to go tell hundreds of people that their dreams of being in The Hobbit are over.
Aww, that is so sad.
Everyone, it's all cut. It's all over. Yeah, sorry, man.
It's been an experience, you know, at least I say I can't die. Can't die wandering the water.
You can't die wondering what if.
And you can go home knowing that you do look a little bit like Samwise.
Why, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
It is.
That is
so
just
the line
so weird.
Has become a biomass. It's just moved
biomass.
And they're just waiting now, I guess, hoping that they'll reopen the doors. Probably not going to happen, though.
Oh, man. So many people there.
Maybe we'll just eliminate the crowd a little bit, but I don't know. I was just hoping maybe you could find out. All right. And is it Vic that was doing the casting? Victoria? Sounds good. Thanks, Will.
Was your mum got it?
My mum?
Oh, was that her?
No, it was my agent.
That's my agent. That movie was posted on stuff.co.nz, and the people don't even want to leave anymore. Even though they hear that the casting is over, you can go home now. They just keep waiting in line, or not really a line. It's truly a biomass. They're just hoping that for some reason or another they might miss one last hobbit or dwarf and.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You don't want to leave because there's always a possibility that they'll be like, oh, no, we need one more. And then you'll be
exactly.
The guy that left.
Exactly. And then everybody has left except for you. But a dwarven army. That sounds awesome.
So I looked up because I don't understand height. I don't understand the international metric system. I looked up these heights. I converted them to height and feet and inches. And
yes.
164 centimeters is about 5'1". 5'4". Mm-hmm. 155 centimeters is about 5'1". 175 centimeters is about 5'8". So
yeah, that's what
my guess is those first two heights are for hobbits, because mm-hmm. That's super short. And then the sort of slightly shorter but not tremendously tall big men with character faces over 175 centimeters. I don't think you're not looking for elves.
No.
If you're asking for character faces.
No.
You're probably not looking for orcs because you don't care what their faces are like. So so when you think about, you know, our groups of people in this book, you've got like at the Battle of Five Armies, elves, men, dwarves, eagles, and orcs. So this really strikes me. I'm wondering if maybe they're recruiting dwarves for Dain Ironfoot's army.
Yes, sounds very likely. Especially because
be
of the conjunction with the announcement of, you know, the what's his name again? Connolly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, perhaps they're just doing everything together. They decided to include this or make this battle bigger than they initially wanted to do it, and that's why they have this extra casting call. Mm-hmm. What surprised me is that they actually want real actors to feature in this battle, because you'd think that nowadays they could probably pull that off with CGI. I mean, we've seen the big battles at the end of The Lord of the Rings, and it was all what was the computer program that they used, Massive or something, or Massively, or I'm getting confused. But there was this kind of new computer technology that allowed them to create
for creating crowds of people.
These crowds, and yet. Not giving them all sorts of variations on the animation cycle, so it wouldn't look like it was computer generated. Although, at the time, I felt that it was artificial. I remember seeing the opening historic overview, and you've got this big battle with What was the big battle? I don't remember what it was called, but with the elves and then Sauron and everything, and it felt completely computer generated.
Perhaps they want to give it
more texture.
I'm hoping that this battle looks much better.
Yeah, more. I want to have something more visceral, more real. And oftentimes with these crowd scenes in The Lord of the Rings, it felt too much like what we've seen in The Phantom Menace, you know, with the Gungans and
the robots.
A little bit too fake. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, and I promised to tie this in with The Hobbit, and it's just not just a random Star Wars reference, but I actually got to see The Phantom Menace in 3D. Which at the time that we're recording this is just entered the theaters. And you know what? The 3D, I think it's very promising for The Hobbit because it gave the movie a whole new level of realism. One of my big complaints with The Phantom Menace was that these fight scenes, these battle scenes, looked artificial and looked almost like a computer game. And the depth that you get in 3D actually took that computer game association away, and it became much more realistic. And I was surprised. I didn't expect that at all, because I thought that the artificiality, is that a word, of these battle scenes was due to, you know, bad CGI or I don't know. And it turns out that if you add depth to it, you're much more sucked in, and your mind just tells you that you're looking at something real, even though it's all computer generated. And that was done in a movie that actually was post-processed to be 3D, let alone if you film it, the whole thing in 3D from the get-go. Watching Star Wars in 3D actually made me much more excited about the 3D aspect of The Hobbit. Because if a 2D movie can look this good in 3D, and believe me, I'm a 3D aficionado, so I've seen probably all 3D movies, all the big 3D blockbusters, even the converted ones recently, Star Wars was by far the best looking that I've seen so far. Even compared to movies that were shot in 3D, like Avatar. That made me really excited. I think the 3D is definitely gonna add a lot to the experience, and it will feel. And now, actually, I want the people that worked on The Phantom Menace in 3D. I want them to go back and do this with The Lord of the Rings. I think it will hugely improve the realism of the movie.
Interesting. That's very promising.
Yeah, and I know there are a lot of 3D
actually made The Phantom Menace more watchable.
Yeah. No, and that's that. Of course, I was wowed by the quality, so I didn't pay attention to all the wooden acting and the bad dialogue and everything. But, you know, it's like, yeah, this is the first time that I really watch a movie where instead of 3D irritating me or giving me a migraine or it's like, ugh, just another gimmick, like this really adds to the movie. It brings the movie to a new level. I was like, if they can do this with The Lord of the Rings, I am going back to theaters, and I will buy those three. I will probably buy myself a new 3D TV just to watch The Lord of the Rings in 3D as well. Anyway,
interesting. That's very promising. I'm enthusiastic now.
It can be 3D can work if you do it well. That's what The Phantom Menace 3D showed me.
Nice.
All right. Back to the news. Back to the Hobbit.
So we've got some other stories that we're getting into the minor news now.
Sure.
I think before we do this, I want to do one thing because we've been putting it off. I want to play the Hobbit trailer remix song that the guy on YouTube made, Caleb Nation.
Where can I find that? So I have to go to YouTube?
I'm going to paste it into a link to it in your Skype window.
Excellent. Excellent. Oh, I got it here. Yes. So this, tell me what this is. This is a remix of the song that we heard in the trailer. Is
yes,
that it?
He took the song from the trailer and did a techno remix of it.
Ah, that makes me scared and apprehensive. Okay, here. Oh, we get an ad first. Of course. You can skip this ad in 1 second. Skip it now. Phew. Okay, here it is. Oh my goodness.
What is that? What is this?
Wow. You know, I'm actually glad that the Caleb or Caleb did this so that Peter Jackson won't be tempted to add this version to the end of, you know, to the credits or something like that. Let's keep it at this. But it's a great job. I mean, it's somehow it works.
Given how little he actually, you know, he had like 30 seconds of music from the trailer to use. It was pretty good.
It is definitely a good remix. I don't think I want to hear this in the movie, though. This kind of stuff.
No, I don't want to hear it in the movie either. There's another one that I put a link to in the show notes that we can maybe play like next week or something, that somebody made something that probably be more your taste, a composer. I don't remember where he was. Basically created a whole music suite based on the Hobbit trailer music. He like took the Hobbit trailer music, kind of transcribed, you know, some of the notes and themes, built upon them a little bit, mixed in some of the old Lord of the Rings stuff, and then created a suite.
Oh, wow. Well, we'll definitely play that next week. We've got a few more minutes, about 2 minutes left for the smaller tidbits in our show notes. Do you want to try to punch a few of them out?
Sure. Well, you know, the big one that we should, next week we'll start doing this as an actual discrete segment, but the big one is, so the Tolkien professor Corey Olson has launched a new podcast series called Riddles in the Dark, and it's quite synergistic with ours. It's about the Hobbit films, and sort of trying to unearth what's going on underneath. It's less focused on the news and more on just talking. It's very topical. And there's a part of it that is each episode is a topic and then ends with a question that requires people to make a prediction. How will this thing be executed in the films?
Nice.
And as a part of that, we are I'm participating in this podcast, helping him out, producing it and stuff. But as a part of that, folks such as ourselves from Secrets of the Hobbit are going to be participating in this prediction game. So Corey will be sending us the same questions and asking us to make predictions. And then on the MythGuard.org site, they will be keeping track of everyone's predictions and tallying a score as things are confirmed or denied. And so it's going to be very fun.
I love it. I love the idea. I always, you know, if you can turn an event like The Hobbit into a game and actually get people involved and guessing, I think it just doubles the fun that we have. Because you can only do this once, and that's before the movies. And once they're in theaters, that will never be able to be done. So, and the fact that Corey is doing it, we're going to get some very good informed speculation.
Yes. So Father Roderick and I will be making predictions in this, and so will people from a variety of other podcasts and sites. Mark Fisher from Encyclopedia Arda is on board now, and Merrick and Golden Star from Casual Stroll to Mordor podcast are going to do it. So we're going to have a fun team of analysts. Eventually, the goal is to add a poll on there so that the listening audiences and fans of these various sites and podcasts can make their own predictions. So it's going to be really fun.
Very cool. Speaking of Casual Stroll to Mordor, I'm eager to listen to their take on the latest rumor, and this is just in, that there might be an expansion to the Lord of the Rings Online based on The Hobbit. Now, it's just a rumor, but it would be huge, and I think it would bring the game to a whole new level if they can tie it into the Hobbit event of the next few years. I think it will guarantee the survival for many more years. So definitely going to check out the next Casual Stroll to Mordor to hear the take of the real experts on this. Thanks for listening to this episode. We will be back soon with another episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. And in the meantime, go to sqpn.com for all our other shows on SQPN. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.